Hello, hello, fearless listeners. Are you ready for another episode of Let Fear Bounce? It's the podcast that's all about conquering challenges and facing our fears. I'm your host, Kim Langling, and each week we'll dive into inspiring stories, expert insights, and practical tips to help you turn your fear into your greatest ally. So sit back, relax, grab that cup of coffee, and let's discover how to make fear our bouncing board towards a life filled with endless possibilities right here on Let Fear Bounce. Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Let Fear Bounce. This is Kim Langling, your host, and I am so happy that you're spending just a small part of your day with myself today and my special guest coming to us from Canada today, folks, Mr. Alistair Henry. He is an author, narrator, adventurist, and double lung transplant recipient. Now that right there is a journey and a story, folks. But his first book, Awakening in the Northwest, there was an experience that he went through that changed the direction of his life, in which he wrote that memoir, Awakening in the Northwest Territories. His most recent book, folks, is Alistair's double lung transplant in 2020 enabled him to finish writing his most recent novel, which is called The Soldier and the Orphan. And he also narrated it as an audiobook. And it seems that he found that folks like that male British accent for audiobooks. So there he is being a narrator, and how exciting, all kinds of different things. Now, Alistair, thank you so much for being on the show today. You have, in between those little sentences that I said, there's so much, so much that you've done. You've traveled the world, done all kinds of things. Let me see here. What else? You were also an international development volunteer for years, and you co-wrote books during that time frame. So my goodness, I'm trying to figure out where we can jump in that. Let's jump in on your first book, your memoir, Awakening in the Northwest Territories. How did that, you know, come into your heart and you said, you know what, I've got to get this down?
Yeah, well, thank you, first of all, Kim, for having me on your show. I like to share my journey and hope it inspires people. I never, none of it was planned. It all just happened. When you say yes to opportunities, doors open and away you go on. I was in the corporate world and I did very well back in those days with stocks and stuff, you know. And when I was 57, I retired. So I went to live in the country on a beautiful, idyllic 50-acre retreat, you know, river running through the property. It was wonderful. But after 2 years, I was bored. I said, I'm only 59. I'm only 59. Is this it? Is it all I'm going to do for the rest of my life is play golf and cut grass? It wasn't enough. I didn't want to go back in the city, been there, done it, been in the corporate world. You know, I wanted something different, something with a bit of an edge to it. So I found this opportunity in a small First Nations community in Canada's Northwest Territories. Now, this is way up past the 60th parallel. And it was just a little fly-in, 300 Chippewa, living on the east arm of Great Slave Lake. And so I went in there for 2 years as the general manager for the development corporations. They had money from the mines. There were diamond mines up there. And they were doing things, joint ventures and things. So I went up there to help them do that. Now, when I went there, my daughter gave me a journal. She said, hey, Dad, write in this because we know it's going to be so different up there. So I said, okay. And I started to write, you know, out of a sense of obligation, I guess, because, you know, Nikki, she was going to say, how's the writing coming, Dad? And then they want to say, well, I haven't started. So I started it. But so much was happening. I was writing every night. I couldn't believe all this. It was like going to the moon. I mean, I was in Canada, but I felt like I was in the moon. The culture, the geography, the worldview, everything was so different. And in that 2 years, it really changed my whole perspective on life. And when I came out at the end, 2 years later, mind you know, time is such a strange concept. I felt like I'd been there forever. I couldn't remember, what did I do before I came here, you know? It was only 2 years when I looked on the calendar. So she said, well, how's the writing, Dad? I said, oh, I got lots of it. But I said, I can't give it to you. You know, it's just notes. It's probably meaningless. So I decided to take them all and go for a month to a little town in Costa Rica on the Panama border called Cahuita. So I went there, got a guest cabin, and every day I just typed up the notes into Word. And I played around with Word, you know, as I'm going through this thing for the fifth time, sixth time. I'm realizing this doesn't go anywhere, so I can delete this, you know. I had about 400,000 words. So this isn't readable. But there was little pieces that there were development, there were threads. So when I got done, I put all that lot together and I called it White Man on the Land. And I gave it to my daughter and I gave it to other people. They said, you know, we really like this, but it behooves the reader to say, well, who was this man that went to Lutz OK and what did he do afterwards? You can't leave the reader in the lurch. So I went back writing, OK, what did he do before he went to Lutz OK? And then what did he do before he came to Canada? And it turned out to be an autobiography. And believe it or not, Kim, that was the start of my days as being an author. I never thought about being an author until then. And then
and that's, I love hearing stories like that.
Writing is practice. I mean, I did read books on it. My son was sending me all sorts of books on how to write, you know. But most of it is just sheer grind. It's just writing and rewriting and rewriting and deleting this, eliminating this, sharpening that. And it's quite a journey. And I was asking myself, what does this add? And if it doesn't add anything, it's gone. Well, it was such a different world up there that I wanted to share my observations and learnings, if you like. Like I went in there as this experienced businessman. That's why they hired me. I went in there with all my best practices, but none of them worked. I had to throw them out, you know. I went up there with all these goals, expectations, objectives, and none of them worked, you know.
What a cool opportunity that you had to do that, you know, and for 2 years that you could really immerse yourself in it. Mm-hmm. And then you came out of there with a memoir, a book.
Yeah.
So how awesome.
Well, not only that, because as I say, when I was 59, I retired.
Mm-hmm.
And I began asking myself, is this it? And I could have said yes. Yeah, feel, you know, this is wonderful, Al. You've retired. You've done what most people in the corporate world wanted, you know. So be satisfied. But there was part of me that wasn't satisfied. I thought, no, there's got to be more to life, you know. And that was really the start of everything. I had no idea. So in the corporate world, as I say, I was a vice president of finance. So it was all about spreadsheets and budgets and meetings. And I was just sort of running through life, multitasking. And that's what I realized, because up there, they live in the moment. They don't care about tomorrow, next week. And I started to live in the moment. I thought, wow, this is luxury, you know. You really do savor life.
What an amazing journey, you know, and that was just the beginning for you, you know, and that you came out with the book Awakening in the Northwest Territories. Where is that available at, by the way?
Everywhere, Amazon, Audible.
Awesome.
Barnes & Noble.
Wonderful. And that's going to be in the show notes, folks. So all of his links and, you know, where his books are available will be in the show notes. But you left there after 2 years.
What happened, Kim? I realized I enjoyed helping people. In the corporate world, I never had that opportunity. There's no community, you know. Well, there was. There was 300 people and they did everything together and they invited me in and I loved it. And that's when I realized, okay, what I want to do, what I really enjoy, is helping people and sharing my knowledge and experience. So from there, I went to Dhaka, Bangladesh for 2 years.
While you were in Bangladesh, you co-wrote Go For It, Volunteering Adventures on the Road, Less Traveled.
Yeah, well, I carried on writing because my daughter said, you know, Dad, really enjoyed that. Can you do the same when you go to Dhaka? I said, sure. So I did the same thing. Now, when I
so you continued journaling, and then that's how this book came about as well, is because you were journaling at the prompting of your daughter.
Yes, but when I came out to Bangladesh, I met my current partner, Candace Whitlock. So this is like 15 years ago. Candace liked what I was doing, and she was the one that said, you know, we really should encourage people, retirees, to think about sharing their skills and trying to make a change for the better in the world, you know. So that's why Candace and I co-wrote Volunteering Adventures on Roads Less Traveled. But then we went to Kingston, Jamaica for a year together, each with separate assignments. And then we went to Georgetown, Guyana for a year. So those Dhaka, Bangladesh, Jamaica, and Guyana are in that book, Go For It, Adventures on Roads Less Traveled.
Well, then you have another book, another memoir, actually, titled The Tides of Change. How did that book come about?
Well, there was another one before that, actually, called Budget Backpacking for Boomers.
Oh, yeah. I love the name of that, Budget Backpacking for Boomers.
Well, what happened, you see, these were assignments. They were like a one-year assignment because they were funded by some, you know, government in the world. So the assignments came to an end. We came home. I moved in with my daughter because I was homeless. Candace moved in with her daughter. And we said, you know, it's not fair. We just keep moving in with our kids. They've got lives. We can't impose ourselves like this. And so we just came up with this idea. Let's go backpacking like we did when we were 20. So we set off and we went for 4 months to Central America. So into Costa Rica, Panama, and Nicaragua, and just a 20-pound backpack. So we did that, and then we were in the top part of Nicaragua. We were going to go to Guatemala, but then we got an organization called CUSO sent us an email saying, are you interested in these positions in Guyana? And we were, so that's how we ended up to go to Guyana. So the second time, after Guyana, we enjoyed the backpacking so much, we decided to do it again, but this time to do Southeast Asia. So to go to Bali, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, and Thailand. Yeah. And we thought the same thing, you know. I mean, people would say, God, you must have loads of money. And we thought, man, if they only knew, we did it on a shoestring. So we thought we'd better write a book to show them how to do it. And we did it, Kim, on $40 a day per person. That was all.
Wow.
And that covered accommodations, meals, and local travel.
What an interesting book to, you know, it's kind of a little different direction from your other stuff. But what, you know, all of your experiences have led directly to the specific book that you've written.
Yeah.
And which is kind of, it's kind of neat to see that as you're explaining it and how it's laid out, you know, the path that that was created for you to travel. How awesome. So after that, that's when you wrote the memoir titled Tides of Change.
Yeah, that was another, it was a 4 month assignment right out on the west coast of BC on Vancouver Island. Well, off Vancouver Island, actually just south of Haida Gwaii. So I went out there as the business coach to help 10 First Nations people launch their businesses. They were rebirthing because in Canada, because of residential schools, the colonialization of First Nations people, there was a horrible history. Anyway, we're helping to rebirth them. It's called Reconciliation Canada. So it was part of that program that I went out there to help these 10 people.
The people that you've met over the years, I can't imagine how each one has in some way given you a different outlook on life.
Yeah. Well, this is why your program resonated with me, because Let Fear Bounce, I decided to be fearless, because I looked at it and I thought, you know, fear is part of our society because it sells products. Everybody's fearful, you know, fearful we're going to get this and what if and what if and what if. And that stops people.
Well, you know, and it's the simple thing, it just one of the simple ones, fear of aging. Look at all the products out there, the billions of dollars that are made on that fear that people have of aging, of looking their age.
Yeah.
That's just one example.
Because our society imparts a different value.
Right.
We don't value aging. We don't want to look old. And it's beautiful. It's so wonderful to be old. I love it.
It's a blessing to be able to get older.
Well, with age comes wisdom, right?
Exactly. And I think people are forgetting that.
Thing is, the other thing to do with fear is when you decide to be fearless and you decide to say yes, that's when opportunities open up like you would never believe. But most people, they don't want to leave their comfort ground. You know, and what happens in life, and we start off and we're full of exciting things. Like I just looked at a skydiving. My granddaughter is in Cairns, Australia. She's got the travel bug like me. So I just looked at this beautiful skydiving video she did the day before. I thought, well, good for you, Madigan, you know. But most people, we lead this predictive life because we're taught to go to university, get a degree, get in the corporate world, keep your nose clean, work hard, and you do this, do that, and you follow this path. But it's not exciting, and it's okay, you know. I think fear stops a lot of people from truly being who they can be, you know.
Oh, no, I do. I agree.
It stops the growth.
Yes, yes. And, you know, you're not meant to be stunted through life.
We're so fortunate in the world because we live in North America. We've got all of these options open to us. Now, the people in Bangladesh, they didn't have any options. Like the rickshaw driver. He's a rickshaw driver because his dad was and his granddad was. I mean, there's a whole history in life of being rickshaw drivers. They have no aspirations to be anything else because they're not possibilities. But they are for us. We can be anything. But we don't really appreciate that opportunity and that privilege. But I keep thinking back to, you know, when I was 59, if I'd have said, yes, this is it, because my friend said, oh, Al, you got it made, you know. Oh, what a beautiful spread you've got, you know. Think yourself lucky. And I could have done, and that would have been it. And I would have never known anything else, right? I'd have spent the last 20 years cutting grass and playing golf. I'm going to search out, and I'm going to say yes to opportunities.
So, okay, we're going to jump to 2020. Because you had a major life thing happen in 2020 for you. Actually, it was life or death, if you think about it.
Well, it was, Kim, because I'd been a smoker all my life, to tell you the truth. Hmm? Mm-hmm. 50 years, pack a day. And I knew that eventually that's what would get me, you know. I tried many times to quit and I couldn't. I just couldn't. So no matter where in the world I was always buying cigarettes and nipping out to have a smoke. Anyway, January 2019, I was having trouble breathing. I was gasping for breath, went to see the respirologist, and he diagnosed me with idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. It's a morbidity of about 3 to 6 years. So I said, well, what have I got? 3 years, 6 years? I mean, it makes a big difference. And they said, well, unfortunately, Al, in your case, the fibrosis is quite advanced. You're looking at 18 months tops. But I always had a Buddhist philosophy, Kim, that allowed me to accept reality unconditionally. I wasn't angry. I wasn't pissed off saying, well, why me? And, you know, I thought, no, I've had a good life. I can't complain. And now it's my time. We all have to die. My first realization, we all have to die.
Right, we do. You know,
most people don't realize that. And the second thing is we all have a best before date. We just don't know when it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yours could be next week. You know, you could get hit by a Mack truck. You don't know.
Right.
We don't know. But all of a sudden, I had a best before date. So I felt, this is great. You know, I've got 18 months to do what I want to do. So what I wanted to do, I wanted to go back to England to say goodbye to my sister and my relatives, nieces and nephews, because I came to Canada by myself when I was 19. So I wanted to celebrate my life while I was on this side. So it was wonderful. It was a really celebration of life. It was very joyous. Anyway, my kid said, "Dad, how about a lung transplant?" I said, "A what?" I said, "You've got to be joking. I'm 75. They don't do lung transplants at my age." And he said, "Look into it, Dad." So I did. And you know, here again, Kim, I was very fortunate. I had pulmonary fibrosis, not lung cancer. And I was in really good shape. I never had prostate cancer, diabetes, high blood pressure. I was in remarkable shape. So I was eligible. So September 4, 2020, I went into the operating room and 12 hours later came out with two new lungs. Marvelous, eh? 4 years ago, nearly.
4 years ago. And they and you were actually looking at your last 6 months.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. What an amazing journey. And you know, well, you're obviously going strong because you're sitting here talking to me and there's no oxygen tank to be seen.
Oh God, no, no.
You know, and how fortunate it's a double lung transplant that they're both working for you all this time later.
Yeah, and the thing is, Kim, you know, it's because somebody signed the donor register, eh?
Yes.
And I'm lucky. I mean, they didn't go looking for a 75-year-old pair of old man's lungs. I got whatever. I might have got a 20-year-old. I don't know. Because in Canada, it's anonymous. I'll never know whose lungs I've got.
Yeah.
But here's the thing that people don't realize. I'm breathing through somebody else's lungs. These lungs will never be mine. I'm taking a whole host of medications for life to suppress my immune system from rejecting the lungs. And they're working wonderfully. So they've got the medications right and the lungs are functioning perfectly. So I'm doing great.
How awesome. How awesome. And like you said, it's all because someone signed their name for the organ donation.
Yeah.
Yeah. More people should think about that too. I've done that. I've got that listed on my license to be an organ donor. You know, if there's something they can use, I'm not going to need it.
The problem is, Kim, young people don't want to talk about death, so they don't want to sign the donor. They're superstitious. They think they're going to attract, you know.
Right. Yes, I understand what you're saying. Yes. Or some people just think it's just too unpleasant. They just don't want to think about it, period.
Exactly.
Because it makes them uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you said, none of us, there's not a single one of us on this planet who will live forever.
And, you know, the other thing is to turn everything around into an opportunity. Everything is an opportunity. But usually we look at it and we just see the downsides. And they say, oh, well, what if? Oh, what if? You know, like when the kid said to me, "Dad, how about a lung transplant?" I said, "Oh, no." I said, "That's so invasive." I said, "I'll probably die on a bloody operating table. You know, I probably won't get off the operating table." And they just said, "You're going to die anyway, Dad." And I thought, you know, that's it. And, you know, when I woke up, when they pulled me out of the operating room and I woke up, the first thought I had was, wow, I'm still here. Couldn't believe it, you know?
Yeah.
Because I really didn't expect to make it through.
Now, how was the recovery long for you?
Oh, 10 days.
Wow.
I know. I was in ICU for two. And then in a thing called step down, because you got all these drain tubes sticking out of your ribs, you know.
Right.
So I was in that for two. And then I was on a ward, but then they wanted me to get up and walk around dragging my IV thing, you know. And they came to me and said, "We're going to discharge you tomorrow." And they said, "Hospitals are for sick people. You're not sick." They said, "No, we're so full of viruses and bacteria." And I couldn't believe it. I thought I'd be weeks recovering. As I say, a long time ago, I got into Buddhism and karma. And I do think what goes around comes around, you know. It doesn't come around exactly the way you left, but it does come around in different forms. And I think I just got so blessed. And, you know, this is the culmination of my life. I'm 80 and I'm still here.
Yes.
I'm thinking, wow.
So what is next for you?
I'm just enjoying my grand seeing my granddaughter skydive.
Oh, how awesome. How I yeah. What an ama- you know what? And I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yes, and you should. Maybe now it's just time to you're not settling. You're not settling. No, you're just enjoying the season that you're in right now.
Exactly.
Oh, wonderful. Well, Alistair, this has been so fun talking to you and learning of your travels and where you've been and the books that you've written. Share real quick your most recent book and where it can be found.
Yeah, the best thing for your listeners is to go up on my website, www.alistairhenry.com, because there are my books. You can read excerpts, reviews, all sorts of stuff. There's stuff on organ transplants.
I appreciate all of your time spending with me today and sharing your amazing journey through life, or at least the last several decades, and sharing, they're inspiring stories, and there's so much hope weaved in and out of your journey. And on that note, I ask all of my guests to toss out a nugget of hope for the listeners that they can tuck away and carry with them. So what would your nugget of hope be for our listeners today?
It would be when you're confronted with an obstacle or something comes up and you have a decision to make, don't let fear win out and say no. Say yes, because when you say yes, doors open, doors you never believe possible. When I was playing golf and that, I never thought that one day, I'd end up in the Amazon rainforest, or I'd end up in, going to the Taj Mahal in India, all because I said, no, there's got to be more to life than this, And that's awesome. It. When you say yes, those doors are, and seriously consider it, what the heck? If it doesn't work out, hey, go to plan B. No, there's not the end of the earth. Yeah.
That's right. And you can always go to plan C, D, E, and F as well.
Absolutely. Spend the rest of your life working out plans.
That's right. That's
right. But everything's a journey and everything is unique and wonderful. And that's the whole thing, Here's a good nugget, really, Kim. All of us should do this. We should pick out a best before date. And we just, just say, well, what do you think? 2 years from now? 3 years from now? Just pick a bit of date out. Okay. I'm going to use this as my date. And you think, okay, what do I want to do between now and then? Instead of this bucket list that goes on forever, Machu Picchu and all the rest of the stuff, got to be realistic. What really matters to you? And for me, I got rid of everything on my bucket list. And the only thing that was left was really to go back to England and spend some time with my sister and my nieces and nephews. That was the only meaningful thing on my bucket list. Amazing.
And you did it. Yeah. And now you get to watch your granddaughter through her adventures. How exciting. That's actually exciting. Well, thank you again, once again, so much, Alistair, for being my guest today on Let Fear Bounce. This has been a beautiful conversation, and I appreciate your time today.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Just enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. Thank you. And everybody out there listening, thank you so much for spending just a small part of your time with my special guest today, Alistair Henry, and myself here on Let Fear Bounce. This is Kim Langling, your host, wishing you all a wonderful day. Be well, stay well, and be blessed. And that is a wrap, my fearless friends. Thanks for bouncing along with me on another episode of Let Fear Bounce. I hope you're feeling a bit motivated and ready to take on any challenge that might come your way in the coming days. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode of Let Fear Bounce. Tune in each week for your dose of inspiration from my amazing guests from all over the world. So until next time, keep bouncing forward and stay fearless, my friends. Everybody be well, stay well, and above all, be blessed.